Blog Talk Radio.
Bring
Greetings, this is Abayomi Azikiwe, and welcome back to another edition of the Pan-African Journal. The Pan-African Journal is an audio news magazine that's brought to you here on a weekly basis. I am your host, Abayomi Azikiwe, and today is Sunday, June 6, 2021. We're broadcasting live from our studios in downtown Detroit. I'd like to thank all of our listeners for tuning in once again to yet another edition of the Pan-African Journal. Later on in our program, we'll be coming up with our regular Pan-African Newswire report, and we'll feature dispatches on the injuring of several people in Somalia by an explosion in the capital of Mogadishu. In neighboring Ethiopia, the country is planning to vaccinate 2 million people against cholera in the northern Tigray region of the Horn of Africa state. United Nations Secretary General Antonio Guterres has condemned the killing of over 100 people in the West African state of Burkina Faso. And in the United States, unrest has erupted again in the city of Minneapolis in the aftermath of the slaying of an African-American by federal marshals. In the second and third hours, we continue our focus on the annual Black Music Month commemorations in the United States, where we examine and will examine in this program the life, times, and contributions of pianist Art Tatum, along with pianist Phineas Newborn Jr. And we're going to, as I mentioned earlier, continue to delve into the many aspects of Black music, African music from the United States and indeed throughout the entire globe. So we want everyone to stay tuned during the course of this month to hear various details on various artists, composers, and musicians. Right now, we'll take a musical break. We'll be back later on with more of our program for this week.
Namoni yote na kekolala Namona ki sebeleta Mwana bato ayeba kalalala Samina koko baboyana Mwena nga kotuna ezalite Pase kinga imingi na baninga Na mali bongo ba moni yote esala kinga soni yanga na yo mabanzo akoleta
koko olingoyo elukiba nanga tea
Bembo koko, butu ya suka tomo na nite Na luka tiyo mingi, na moni yote na keiko lala Na mona kise beleta, mwana bato ayeba kalala Samina koko babo yana, mwena ngako tuna, ezalite Bate kinga imingi na baninga Nali bongo ba moni yote Esala kinga soni Yanga yo mabanzo na koleta Nasepela nini inga imwana mama Kisangani mosika baboti yo koko Nasolo langa ina nani mama Nisema ke angu swahili Nakanisi mingi inga imwana papa Tongo yoso nazalise na dom kafe Na longo la basu siye kofondi sangai Upo angu alo koleta Nasepela nini inga imwana mama Misangani mosika baboti yokoko Nasolo langa ina nani mama Nisema ke angu swahili Nakanisi mingi inga imwana papa Tongo yoso nazalise na dom kafe Na longo la basu siye kokondi sangai Uko angu alo koleta Uko angu alo koleta Mwana mama, misangani mosika baboti yo koko Nasolo langa ina nani mama, nisema ke angu swahili Nakanisi mingi inga imwana papa Tongo yoso nazalise na dom kafe Nalongo la basu siye koko ndisangai Uko angu wago koleta Uko angu wago koleta Mata mama sambongo na bala yo tozonga mboka ezambaleke oh mama ikanga ina luka mbongo na bala yo tozonga mboka ezambaleke oh mama ikanga ina luka mbongo na bala yo tozonga mboka ezambaleke balongolie lokolo moko balongolie mopanzi moko balongolie motapi moko ae ae yona yeo yona ye tuka zeni wae ae ae toi et moi la fin c'est la mort zambaleke
bala ningena komi komi lela opapa moka ngilinga motema ona likambona sani feo nomola mafeli
Thank you. Sali bambada, Oye,
Rajitan,
oye.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Pan-African Journal, the worldwide radio broadcast. And that was the music from Les Maisons de Marengue, La Societe de Ambianchures, music from the Congo, Brazzaville. And this is the Pan-African Journal, worldwide radio broadcast. And today is Sunday, June 6, 2021. And we're broadcasting live from our studios in downtown Detroit. Right now we want to move into our Pan-African Newswire segment. Our lead story deals with the current situation in the Somalian capital of Mogadishu. A police officer who did not want to be identified told the international press the blast, there was a blast today near a busy junction in Afgoye. It was causing casualties to those who were around the area, and at least eight people were injured. And it's supposed to have been a landmine that was placed along the road. It went off near X-Control Junction in the Somalian capital of Mogadishu. This was reported on yesterday. The officer said that he could confirm that eight people have been injured so far, and we will give details further. Witnesses said the blast occurred while a military vehicle was passing by. Someone, Liban Ahmed, said that we heard a huge blast at X-Control Afgoye, but I cannot tell you how many people were killed or injured. There was no immediate claim of responsibility for the attack. However, the government often blames al-Shabaab and, of course, usually stages such attacks inside the country. And in relationship to the situation in neighboring Ethiopia is to administer anti-cholera vaccines to 2 million residents. They are going to be targeting the Northern Tigray Regional State. And that's according to an Ethiopian official. They made this statement on yesterday. Speaking to state media outlets, Fasika Amdi Selassie, Health Bureau Chief of the Tigray Region Interim Administration, said two people living in 13 cities in the region will receive two rounds of anti-cholera vaccines starting next week. Amdi Selassie told the media that the anti-cholera vaccination campaign will start next Thursday and is expected to continue for up to 2 weeks. We'll target in particular the estimated 2 million internally displaced persons living in the Tigray region. With many people who live outside the Tigray regional state of Mekelle drinking river water, the risk of cholera outbreak are substantial. Counter this health threat, the Tigray Interim Administration plans to vaccinate millions of residents of the Tigray region with medicines provided by the World Health Organization. Hamdi Selassie said as well, with the rainy season expected to start in mid-June and continue until mid-September, the Ethiopian government is bracing for an outbreak of cholera across the country and is doing preparatory works to prevent disease occurrence. You're listening to the Pan-African Newswire segment of the Pan-African Journal. In other news, the United Nations Secretary General Antonio Guterres on yesterday strongly condemned the heinous attack by under-identified assailants on a village in the province of Yaga in the Sahel region of Burkina Faso, which resulted in the killing of over 100 civilians, seven of whom were children. Through a statement attributable to his spokesperson, Stéphane Dujarric, the UN chief expressed his outrage over the killing and underscores the urgent need for the international community to redouble support to member states in the fight against violent extremism and its unacceptable human toll. The Secretary General expressed his deepest condolences to the victims' families, as well as to the government and people of Burkina Faso. He wished those injured a speedy recovery, conveyed the full support of the United Nations to the authorities in their efforts to overcome the threats to peace, stability, and unity inside the country. And finally, in the United States, demonstrators faced off with police officers in Minneapolis early yesterday morning over the shooting death of a black man by members of a U.S. Marshals task force. Photos from the scene following a visual for Winston Boogie Smith Jr., who was 32 years old, showed dumpster fires in the street and a line of officers standing guard. It was the second night of protest in response to the fatal shooting Thursday in Minneapolis uptown neighborhood. Police said 27 people were arrested in the protest, with 26 accused of rioting and one facing a weapons charge. No injuries were reported. Some businesses sustained damage, the police said. Authorities said Friday that Smith was wanted on a weapons violation and fired a gun before two deputies shot him while he was inside a parked vehicle. Members of the U.S. Marshals Fugitive Task Force were trying to arrest victim on a warrant for allegedly being a felon in possession of a gun. Family and friends describe Smith as a father who was often harassed by police. They are demanding transparency in the investigation and have asked that anyone who might have video footage to come forward. Police said some people vandalized buildings and stole from businesses after the shooting Thursday. Nine people were arrested on possible charges, including suspicion of riot, assault, arson, damage to property. The fatal shooting comes as Minneapolis has been on edge since the death of George Floyd just over a year ago, and the fatal shooting of Dwan Wright by an officer in nearby Brooklyn Center in April. With that, though, we're going to conclude the Pan-African Newswire segment of our program. In concluding this segment, we want to remind our listeners that the Pan-African Newswire is an international electronic press service. It is designed to foster intelligent discussions on the affairs of African people throughout the continent and the world. The press agency was founded in January of 1998, and since then, it has published thousands upon thousands of articles and dispatches in various newspapers, magazines, journals, research reports, and on blogs and websites throughout the world. The Pan-African Newswire represents the only daily international news source on Pan-African and global affairs. If you'd like to log on to the Pan-African Newswire so you can stay abreast of some of the most pressing and burning issues of the day, all you need to do is go to panafricannews.blogspot.com. If you'd like to have access to today's Pan African Journal, this special worldwide radio broadcast, just go to the Pan African Radio Network. That's at blogtalkradio.com/Pan African Journal. That's blogtalkradio.com/Pan African Journal. We'll take a break. We'll be back after this.
One time my papa had a horse. His name was Frank Jean. Man, that's the runnest horse the world ever seen. And it just do me good to ride old Frank Jean. And do you good to sit and listen to him sometime when he coming down that pike road, almost making his feet talk. Man, that's the strangest foot horse the world ever seen. Something kind of like this. Go on, Frank Jean, go on. I had him out with me once he got loose. I couldn't catch him to save my life. I called Frank Jean my corner. He didn't seem to pay me no mind. I went and told my papa, how would you do if you want to catch a horse? He said, how did you do? I said, I called mine. Called Frank Jean calling. He didn't seem to pay me no attention. But that's a horse. You didn't call him right. You must whistle when you want your horse to come to you. Something kind of like this. Then he come and sang a foot to me. Took him out again. He got loose from me. I called him and called him. He didn't seem to pay me no attention. I thought about what Papa said. You was a horse. I must whistle for you. Something like this. Then he comes saying something to me. $5,000 bet on Frank Jean. Course I wasn't scared at all. Course I know he wasn't gonna let me lose. Before he let me lose, he run off all his shoes. Something like this. Go on, Frank Jean.
Welcome back, and that was the music of Memphis Minnie with the tune entitled Frank Jean. And this is, of course, Black Music Month, and as we started in our previous program, we began to highlight specific Black and African-American artists in the United States. Previous episode, we highlighted Evelyn Prayer, as well as Adelaide Hall from the 19-teens, 1920s, 1930s. We also heard music from the previous program by Gertrude Mulrainey, as well as music from Mamie Smith, along with Bessie Smith. Our first feature artist for this program is Art Tatum Jr. And Art Tatum Jr. Was born on October 13, 1909. He died on November the 5th of 1956. He was an African-American jazz pianist. He was widely acclaimed and regarded as one of the greatest in his field. From early in his career, Tatum's technical ability was regarded by fellow musicians as extraordinary. Many pianists attempted to copy him. Other questions their own skills after encountering him, and some even switched instruments in response. In addition to be acclaimed for a virtuoso technique, Tatum extended the vocabulary and boundaries of jazz piano far beyond his initial stride influences and established new ground in jazz through innovative use of reharmonization, voicing, tonality. Tatum grew up in Toledo, Ohio, where he began playing piano professionally and had his own radio program. He broadcast and rebroadcast nationwide while still in his teens. He left Toledo in 1932 and had residences as a solo pianist at clubs in major urban centers, including New York, Chicago, and Los Angeles. In that decade, he settled into a platform that he followed for most of his career. Paid performances followed by long hours and after hours, playing all accompanied by a prodigious consumption of alcohol. He was said to be more spontaneous and creative in these after-hour venues. And although the drinking did not negatively affect his playing, people speculate that it did damage his health in the long term. In the 1940s, Tatum led a commercially successful trio for a short time and began playing in more formal jazz concert settings, including at Norman Grant's produced jazz at the Philharmonic events. His popularity diminished towards the end of the decade as he continued to play in his own style, ignoring the rise of what later became known as bebop. Grant's recorded Tatum's extensively in solo and small group formats in the mid-1950s, with the last session occurring 2 months before the pianist's death at the age of 47. And we're going to listen to an interview with Art Tatum. This interview was with Leigh Cameron. Let's listen to Art Tatum in his own words.
Hello, may I speak with Art Tatum, please?
Yes, it is Art.
Art, sorry to invade your privacy. I know you're a busy guy, but we conduct live on-the-air interviews by way of phone and proxy. We wanted the audience to meet you because we have so many people who listen to Art Tatum and have revered him during the years, and we wanted to talk to him personally.
Well,
how are you tonight?
Pretty good, Leigh.
I know there's one thing in particular that was mentioned in one of our party line calls the other night. Oscar Peterson, the young Canadian pianist, mentioned that, the three pianists that influenced him the most were Art Tatum, Nat Cole, and Teddy Wilson. We've always wondered who influenced you and inspired you to play the way you do.
Well, I can say that by saying Lee Sims and Fats Waller.
And they were the people that influenced you the most.
That's correct.
What did you like about Lee Sims, for example?
Well, I mean, he had a beautiful technique, and I mean, it was something that I had never heard before, so I guess that's, you know.
And how about Fats, the spirit of all things, huh?
Well, I mean, that goes without saying that a lot of people never knew the appreciation of Fats Waller, I mean, because of the fellow's entertainment ideas, but also he was a great pianist.
Do you like the modern style of piano? It was played by, well, say, such people as Bud Powell.
Yes, I appreciate, let's say, progressive jazz or bop, as you might call it. However, I don't think it gives the left hand as much to do as it should.
Uh-huh, and that left hand belongs to you.
Well, I mean, that belongs to any pianist, I think. Any good pianist should have two good hands.
I should say so. Well, you know, there seems to be quite a difference in the makeup and the personality of the modern musician and the gentleman of your school. What do you think about that? That is, there is a distinct difference. I don't know.
Oh, well, I don't know. I can't say on that. I wouldn't say that because I met some very, very nice young chaps around here, and they're very eager to get a hit, such as Oscar Peterson, I think is going to do a lot more. I don't think he's even reached his height yet.
Have you ever heard of a young American by the name of Calvin Jackson up in Toronto, Canada?
Yes, I know him very well. I've known him for a long time.
He's vastly underrated, isn't he?
Oh, I should say so.
And he's a great composer and arranger as well. Art, how long ago did you start in the music business? Must have been what?
Oh, let's see. That's if I tell you that, I'll have to be telling my age, which I'm 43 years old. And
that's
I started in Toledo, Ohio, say about 1924, 23, 24, when I was about 14 years old.
And did you play around radio stations in that area?
Yes, I did. WSBG, WTA in Cleveland, SBD in Toledo, WWTA in Detroit.
Uh-huh.
So I've done quite a bit of that work.
I should say. Well, now, it certainly is an inspiration talking to you. Wish we had more time on the party line. It's almost 10 o'clock bandstand time over there. So we'd like to thank you very much for taking this time off.
It's a real pleasure. I mean, any time I'd be glad to with you.
Come and visit the 1280 Club, WOV, New York.
All right, bye.
We'd love to visit with you. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Welcome back, and that was an interview with Art Tatum. The man speaking for himself, being asked about who influenced him, who his, some of his favorite pianists were, and some of the radio work that Art had done, the touring he had done beginning in the early years of his career. Yeah, very, very, very interesting interview. Here's another interview with Art Tatum. Let's listen in.
Well, as we said just a few minutes ago, the solo attraction here at the Embers Club is none other than the great, the one and only Art Tatum. And before he goes on the bandstand, I thought it might be a good idea to have a few words from him. Art, it's been quite a long time since you were overseas. Wasn't it, how long are you, say?
Oh, 1937, 1938. That is in person in Europe, you mean?
Yes, when you were in England. Were
yes,
we on the continent?
No.
Just
England? Yes, I used to go over every Sunday, though.
Oh, I see. But that was the extent of
many cars. I used to go here many on Sundays, see, because I was working in London, and therefore it, you don't work in London on Sunday.
On Sunday.
You know?
Oh, I see. And that was the only chance you got to go to France, right?
That's right.
And there's still a lot of territories you'd have to cover maybe in the near future.
I imagine.
Well, I think you're ready for a European or an international tour.
I don't know. I'm kind of afraid of it. But,
well, there are thousands, hundreds of thousands of people that know you from your records. In fact, it might be a good point to ask you, what do you think is perhaps the outstanding record that you've ever made?
Leonard. I think that's
a difficult question, but...
That's kind of rough, but I'll tell you what I think is one of my best.
That
I like best is Deep Purple.
That's
I made it on a Decca record a long time ago, and that's my humoresque that I did.
Well, that's the two great selections. Personally, I will go for Sweet Lorraine. That is a
very
special favorite
of
mine.
That came out of the album with Humoresque.
That's right. That was a wonderful
album. We have a Capitol album, and I got to write Sing the Blues, a pretty good thing. Everybody likes it, Dancing in the Dark, so I don't know.
Well, you have a very wide selection. Fortunately, you're well represented on records, and the records have gone all over the world. I hope you will go where the records have gone in person one of these days. Maybe you can give us another answer to a question that might be of interest to a lot of people. That is, who do you think are the outstanding young pianists that have come up in the last few years that are great favorites of yours?
Well, I'll tell you. That's a difficult thing for me to say because I love all pianists, Leonard.
Well, I know that, but
I love Teddy Wilson. I love Joey Bushkin. I love, of course, the great Franz Walter is dead. You know what I mean?
Yes, but there are some new kinds of
And I think Oscar Peterson plays very good piano.
He's wonderful.
And I also like George Shearing, whom I think does a whole lot with a group. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
I think it's so beautiful, you know?
I believe Hank Jones is one of your favorites.
Yes,
too,
he is, yeah. I mean, that's why I said I don't want to start calling off names because there's so many guys that play beautifully.
You're afraid you might forget someone.
That's right, and I don't want to be the fellow to forget.
Well, Art, we'll just leave it this way.
Poor Art Tatum is getting older and cannot play anymore.
Well, we're going to disprove that right now, Art. We want to thank you for the interview, opportunity to interview you here, and we'd like you to go up on the bandstand right now and prove once and for all that the last remark you made is completely unjustified.
No, I mean, that's a real pleasure, and I'm glad you come in. And anytime, Leonard, you can do this, it's a pleasure for me.
Well, the pleasure is
my pleasure.
Thank you very much.
All right.
Welcome back, and that was an interview with Art Tatum. From, according to the document, dated in 1951. And, of course, Art Tatum, a legendary pianist, jazz pianist. And right now we're going to listen to a audio documentary on Art Tatum, and also Art Tatum's influence on Phineas Newborn Jr., who was also a legendary jazz pianist from Tennessee, grew up in Memphis and played considerably in the Memphis area, and then, of course, in the mid-1950s went to New York and made quite an impact on the jazz scene there. So let's listen in to this educational point about Art Tatum along with Phineas Newborn Jr.
Welcome to Like It Is. This edition will focus on the piano and two men of exceptional proficiency at that instrument, Art Tatum and Phineas Newborn. We'll get underway in just a moment.
If you've got a dollar and you've got a daily news, you might already be a millionaire. Check your dollar, check the news, and play Millionaire Lucky Bucks only in the day.
The piano is an instrument that many credit with having origins in Africa and was additionally developed in Europe. Here in this nation, many have drawn great beauty out of the piano, but few have matched the two pianists that we explore today. Art Tatum is generally acknowledged as the colossus of the instrument. Although he died on November 4th of 1956, musicians still speak his name in awe. We'll try to show you why. Phineas Newborn is alive. He's in his early 50s. One might regard him then as a musical offshoot of Art Tatum, and a brilliant one. There's glory and sorrow in the story of Mr. Newborn, a diminutive man with a technique that could take your breath away. Newborn today, some 25 years later. like it is filmed in at the Sweet Basil nightclub in Greenwich Village in late 1983. There was a marked difference in the man. He is physically aged, but even more obvious was his playing. He was good, but somehow not quite the same. His playing seemed hesitant, as though he wasn't as sure of himself anymore. What we say here is most difficult to express. This man is a revered artist who is still making a living at his craft. Mr. Newborn is in his early 50s and should still be in the fullest cry of his abilities. And even without functioning at his full measure of brilliance, he's still better than most. And yet it's perhaps because of his importance as an artist that we feel compelled to note his decline and try to find out why it occurred. Jamil Nasser was the bassist with Mr. Newborn at our filming. Mr. Nasser has known Phineas since they were kids.
Oh, since I was about 4 years old.
Really?
Mm-hmm. We lived about a block and a half from one another.
Really?
And he was born in that house. I was born in the house about 10 blocks away. And then we moved closer when I was 4 years old.
When did you start getting interested in music and when did he?
Well, you know, that's a tough question because I think it happened in, by natural process for me. I really wanted to be in sports. And so I got a much later start than Phineas because Phineas had a piano teacher almost ever since I knew him. And I know he went through piano teachers so fast, you know, he outgrew them at a rapid pace.
Mm.
And I think his first piano teacher was the most impressive to him because when she gave him the basics, this is the way of genius. Once he knew the basics, he had all the rest figured out. You know, that's the difference between genius and ordinary people like myself.
What was the attraction in sports?
Boxing.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah.
So then when did you get the message that boxing was not for you and perhaps something else would do, namely music?
Well, one night after I won, I looked in the mirror and I couldn't believe it.
You won?
Yeah, a unanimous decision. And I said, no, that's not for me. I was sort of like Muhammad Ali about my face.
Uh-huh.
And I said, no. So I went down to the band the following day and enlisted to play tuba in the band.
But you remain close friends with Phineas in Memphis.
Always, yeah, always.
It was a family of brothers.
Two brothers, yes. Calvin Newborn, the guitarist, fine guitarist. And he also played flute, and he played trombone. And Phineas played anything he touched.
Really?
Phineas could play trumpet, saxophone, just drums, anything.
Well?
Well, exceptionally well. He could have been either one of those that he wanted to be and would have been had to be something to deal with.
How old was he when he was a fully developed talent?
Oh, 12 or 13.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, as a matter of fact, he was always being pulled out of school to do special performances, you know, at the city hall and different schools around the city. He was gone more than he was in school.
Was he playing jazz or all kinds of music?
Well, you know, he had a talent for playing almost anything. He was a boogie-woogie specialist. He had a rhythm and blues act, you know, with his father's band. And they could send people into a frenzy, you know, just from the piano. He was always a swinger, more or less. And he had the technique all along. You know, I can't remember when he didn't have the technique. That, you know, a lot of people make issue over technique. we never were impressed with technique. You know, and we never thought of Finneas as having technique. We just thought of him as a guy who could play, who could just play anything that comes in his head, sort of stand you on end, you know.
Hmm. Where did he get that influence from when he really hit the scene big in the 50s?
Well,
he really started blowing everybody.
Well, you know, we, see, Memphis was a city. It's unfortunate because New Orleans got all the publicity. But you have to remember that Jimmy Lawson's band came out of Memphis. W.C. Handy, when he got to Memphis, he couldn't leave, you know? And that's when you started getting all that wonderful music of W.C. Handy. And at that time, he had been to New Orleans, he had been to Kansas City, he had been, you know, all the places. But it was so much happening on Beale Street in variety. And we were raised in that variety, plus the level of artistry that was demanded of us. You know, we had to be excellent. And we had excellent teachers like Bill Harvey and Anze Horn and just a whole group of people that made sure that we would not be ordinary musicians.
Well, now, how did they exact these demands? On the bandstand, or was there a school, or was there after-hours joints?
No, it was OJT, on-the-job training. You know, they would fire you in a second if you weren't doing it. But on the other hand, they expected you to come back and ask them how to do it. You know, so it was a general, very general treatment in some cases and a very rough treatment in others. Because if they saw that you were kidding around when you should be serious, they were very hard on you.
How would they be hard on you? What would they do?
Well, I'll give you a perfect example. Bill Harvey, who was an excellent arranger and an excellent saxophonist, tenor saxophonist, would tell you, learn these songs well. And then one night he would come on and he'd say, okay, we're going to play this a third higher, you know, which means, you know, a third higher than the key that you're accustomed to. And then he'd say, one, two, one, two, three, four, and you were expected not to make any mistakes. And when you did, he could make his eyes this big, you know, and in front of all the public and everything. He didn't have to say anything. He would just come to you and just stare, you know, and the people would be going crazy. Well, you'd be so embarrassed that that would never happen again. Other times, I was fired from the back of a dance hall, and there was only one way out. And family and friends and neighborhood people and everybody were there. But the guy knew what he was doing.
So, in other words, you had to learn your music in all keys, all your tunes, you had to know in all keys.
If you knew it, you were supposed to be able to play it anywhere it was called. And that was our foundation. And Finneas, getting back to Finneas, he was laughing at those little problems that we were having because he had taken that and he had gone on somewhere else. You know, he became an island early.
What do you mean when you say an island?
Well, see, when you pass over from just being, say, exceptionally great into genius, then you become an island. You know, like the Art Tatums, even Louis Armstrong, you know, after he passed a certain point, he became an island. You take Charlie Parker, you know, this is genius. So after they pass a certain point, you can't compare. See, I wasn't excited by Bud Powell, you know, as the New Yorkers were when I came. Because first of all, we had heard Finneas, and we had heard Oscar Dinard. See, that's another genius from St. Petersburg, Florida. And they used to meet, and it would be like more music than you'd ever want to hear.
Was Finneas a contemporary of Bud Powell? I would have thought Bud was much older than...
Yeah, we all came up listening to Bud. You understand? But he wasn't as exciting as Finneas. Let me put it that way. Because Finneas was two-fisted. Thank you. Phineas was like, he would do all that, you know, with one hand. And he used to play games with Bud Powell solos, you know, where he playing Bud's line with the left hand and comping with the right. And then he'd do something else in here, you know, with this hand. You know, it was like comedy. You know, he'd take it and make comedy. And also, so equipped that he could hear an R. Tatum thing and say, that's great, man. Listen to what he did. Here's what he did. He never imitated R. But he would go to the piano and say, listen to that. You know what he did? And instantly, you know, he had it.
Mm.
And, you know, that's why I say we weren't really excited about New York, to tell you the truth, because the guys prepared us in such a way that they made...
You were already in the promised land.
That's right. That's right. And see, we had... Beale Street was more history, more happened on Beale Street, I think, than almost any other place in the country over the years. You know, like Kansas City had a period, you know, when Prez and Charlie Parker and all of them. Detroit had a period when Bad and, you know, and all that group were out there. Then you had Chicago, you know, they had the Johnny Griffins and like that. But see, what Memphis had, you know, everybody who came here to Chicago, New York, and places like that, they came from the South. You know, everybody who was anything came from that long line, that long lineage, going back to pre-W.C. Handy, to pre-Jimmy Lunsford. And Beale Street was active. It was action all the time.
So this is the soil out of which Phineas grew.
That's right. Ma Rainey, you know, the whole works. You know, we had some terrific, dynamic people down there.
And for, I guess, about a decade, maybe two,
mm-hmm.
he was just blowing everybody away.
That's right.
Was scorching.
That's right.
Technique.
As a matter of fact, he was our secret weapon. You know, people who didn't know him, we'd slip him in on them, you know, because you'd take a pianist, a horn player, come in town, and so Phineas was our secret weapon, you know. We'd go wake him up out of the bed and say, come on, here's a guy out here, man. He's really playing better than you. And, you know, this got his dialed up, so when he would get there, he would really show off, you know.
I've just had one of my best buying trips ever. It was so good, I think I'm in trouble.
We're already stocked to the rafters with carpets from America's Top Mills. To make room, I'm cutting the price of my 12 best-selling carpets in half Monday and...
Is
See, Phineas and I came to New York together in 1956. That's a vow that we made as children almost, that we would come to New York together. He came to New York under one of the biggest press campaigns, I think, of any musician. I don't think Art Tatum got the press. We had three-page spread in Esquire, the whole works. And till then, no jazz artist had been in, no black jazz artist had been in Esquire at all. I don't even think Nat Cole had been in there.
Not even Ellington, huh?
Which was, you know, Nat Cole was a great influence on all of us, too. But when we got to New York...
As a pianist, Nat was.
Yes, that's right. Yeah. That's what I mean.
Okay.
Good singer. He impressed us on his piano. We got to New York, and, you know, the glitter and the glamour and this and that. And Phineas was a person who didn't ever have to take care of any business. You know, everything was laid out for him. You know, as a matter of fact, his father spoiled him, and I think we all spoiled him, because we wouldn't let him do anything for himself. So what would be a small problem to you, a normal person, was a big one to him. So when he got the biggies, well, came from bad business arrangements. And at one point in his life, he stood up and he wanted to be his own man. And he said, I want to record for this record company. I want to go with this booking agency. I want to do that. And what happened, there was a boycott put on Phineas, and I call it a white list. You know, we have many victims. This white list has caused a lot of great American tragedies. And I can go all the way back to Blind Tom, you know, and show you these tragedies. I can itemize them all the way up. Whereas when you go on that white list, nothing ever works for you again. And you never come off of it.
You mean he tried to break away from the established order?
The established order that was laid out for him.
He tried to...
He wanted to change that order.
There were a few major booking conglomerates, and he tried to break away from them without calling
sometime
names.
Sometimes, when you lift the covers, you see strange bedfellows. And so where you think you're just working with this booking agency or that record company or that this and that that, you'll find that it's...
They're all in the family.
So when one says thumbs down, not only do that little conglomerate there says thumbs down, but everything around it says thumbs down. His wife was pregnant with the first child. No work, no possibility of any work. A genius like that, just think about that. You know, that gets me all over again, you know. No possibility. Anyway, Roy Haynes and I hired him to work in Birdland for a three-week engagement. And we decided we were going to split the money in thirds because we knew that Dottie was pregnant and that baby would be coming at any time, snow on the ground and all this. His money was garnished. Anywhere he worked, his money was garnished. So I just finished telling you that what was a big problem, a small problem to you, was a big one to him, you know? And he had a nervous breakdown. He had a nervous breakdown, and you know, we speak of the joy and the sorrow. I don't think that there would be any need for sorrow if this man hadn't been boycotted out of the industry. You know, he's lying dormant in Memphis, and if he was out here applying his craft, you know what people ask me when I try to tell them about Phineas Newborn in some clubs? What is his hit record? Genius don't need a hit record. So, you know, this is, and the fact that, you know, sometimes he seemed to be tentative on certain things, he has every right to be. Yeah. Lucky Thompson was put on a white list some years ago.
Saxophonist.
One of our very important people. I mean, our important. He's one of our most important saxophonists. He fits right into the scheme of things. Somebody didn't like him up there. And they said, you're finished in this business all over the world, and you never heard another Lucky Thompson record? You never heard another engagement by Lucky Thompson? That's another great American tragedy. He's somewhere on an island in South Carolina. Who knows what he's doing? Maybe he's on medication, too. He could be on medication, too.
So saying this is part of a plan? Or
it's a definite plan. Now, let me tell you this, what the very recent is. I'm seeing white artists coming out of retirement because the pieces are in place where they're burying the genius. They're burying the kings. The kings are being buried. The Frank Fosters. Look, Frank Foster wrote Shiny Stockings. Remember that? One of Count Basie's hits. If he had been in the white skin, that would carry him for the rest of his days. The same like Blues Ed carried Toots Thielman. That's the only one he wrote, right? The Moon. Frank Foster, King. George Coleman, King. Lou Donaldson, King. And he go, Ahmed Jamal. Wait a minute. If he was Liberace, if Liberace could play like that, are you kidding? Come on now. Let's get down to brass tacks. There's a plan afoot to smother the kings and replace them with white kings.
Thus, the joy and the sorrow of a consummate artist, Phineas Newborn. Though his story is indeed one of sorrow, at the same time he has left us a rich recorded legacy. And for those who care to listen, we can find great joy. Colossus in a moment, Art Tatum. Tatum was born on October 13, 1910, in Toledo, Ohio, legally or technically blind. No vision at all in one eye, very limited vision in the other. Tatum's parents were musical. His mother played piano. His father from North Carolina played guitar, although not professionally. By the time Art Tatum was 20 years old, he was a fully developed pianist, although he had been dabbling in music since he was a mere toddler. Interestingly, he didn't start out at the piano. The violin was his first choice, but things didn't go well at that instrument, and he shifted to the piano. Tatum's awesome technique and style was the outgrowth of the style of many pianists who had preceded him, like Meade Lux Lewis. Influenced the development of Art Tatum. As did ragtime piano, immortalized by U.B. Blake. An exponent of Blake's rag style was Willie the Lion Smith, whose striding left-hand style also influenced Tatum. Fats Waller was a monumentally gifted pianist, although this clip doesn't reveal it, who was a major influence on Art Tatum. And then there was Earl Father Hines, who emphasized the right hand, incorporating strong octaves with dazzling runs. Tatum listened closely and copped. Art
Art Tatum took these styles, embellished and extended it to staggering proportions. Tatum was truly and richly endowed by the musical gods with a talent that forced all musicians with any sense to stop dead in their tracks and listen whenever and wherever he played. Many of his contemporaries found him terrifying because of his artistic prowess.
Also, Art Tatum was on the bill. It was Benny Carter's band, King Cole Chill, and Art Tatum.
He's a pretty fair piano player.
Oh!
Did he have the same impression on you?
Of me?
Did he have the same, you know, did he make the same impact on you? Did he shape?
Oh, yeah, I'm afraid so. He made the same impact on everybody.
To underscore the weight of Mr. Peterson's statement, let's take a look at Peterson's playing. This greatness speaks in such revered tones of Art Tatum. Maybe you can get an idea of what Art Tatum's ability was about.
To me, he still is the all-time genius of the instrument, and I don't bar the classical field when I say that. I include the classical field in it for a very definitive reason. And I don't want to start a big controversy about this, but I feel that it's one thing to be able to play classical music, and I'm not speaking disparagingly about it because there are some geniuses in that field also, obviously. But for a man to come up with the kind of improvisational depth and conception and control that he had and the pianistic insights that he had, the harmonic and tonal sense and